Hello, welcome to the Rethink Your Understanding podcast, where we dive deep into transformative insights on leadership, agile, lean, DevOps, value stream management, and flow engineering. I'm your human host, Phil Clark. I've been leading technology teams for over two decades in both eras of software delivery. In each episode, the AI-generated hosts dive into key concepts and insights from my articles and blog posts. While this conversation is generated by AI, there may be occasional errors or misinterpretations that differ slightly from the original material. Join me as we explore and improve our understanding of digital transformation. I hope this inspires you to read the original article and reach out to me to collaborate. You will find a link to the article in the show notes. Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, please like, rate, and follow us on your podcast provider of choice. Your support helps us reach more listeners, and every review counts. Stay tuned for more thought-provoking content, and thanks for being part of our podcast experiment and journey. In this episode, The Price of Alignment, we explore what happens when innovation meets bureaucracy. When a large, centralized organization acquires a smaller, agile one, the push for alignment and consistency can come at a steep cost. Drawing from the story of two companies, Legacy Tech and AgileWorks, we examine how forcing uniform management models onto autonomous, microservice-based teams can unravel the very agility and speed that made them valuable in the first place. The conversation dives into Conway's Law, bounded contexts, and the critical leadership lesson every executive should learn before integrating two very different worlds of software delivery. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to the Deep Dives. Today, we're jumping right into a really fascinating area where tech, org design, and M&A collide. We're looking at this great piece by Phil Clark called The Price of Alignment.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And our mission really is to unpack this this kind of paradox you see all the time in integrations, is how good intentions, like wanting everything neat and consistent, can actually end up wrecking the very things, you know, the speed, the agility that made a company worth buying in the first place.
Exactly.
Phil's case study, which you can find over on rethinkyourunderstanding.com, is just, well, it's essential reading if you're dealing with growth or trying to merge companies.
It really is. It perfectly shows these unintended consequences playing out.
Mm-hmm.
Phil lays out this clash between two successful but totally different ways of operating.
Right.
You've got Legacy Tech, the big buyer, right? Built for control, stability, uniformity. Rock solid.
Okay.
And then you've got AgileWorks, the smaller company that bought, optimized completely differently for speed, for iteration, independence.
Oh, okay.
So the conflict isn't really about, you know, bad tech versus good tech. It's about these two organizational DNAs just slamming into each other. Independence versus uniformity.
That phrase, organizational DNA, that's exactly what we need to dig into. And just a reminder for everyone listening, we're basing this discussion entirely on Phil Clark's article. We'll, you know, explore the ideas, maybe expand a bit, but definitely check out the full piece on his site. The detail is fantastic.
Absolutely.
So let's start with Legacy Tech. You said monolithic systems control. How did that shape their teams?
Yeah, Legacy Tech is your classic, large, established player. Their tech stack, mostly monolithic, a huge code base. And success for them meant, above all, control, reliability, predictability. Predictability is key.
Makes sense.
So their org structure reflected that need for centralized oversight. They had this fixed span of control model, very specific. One engineering manager, or EM, overseeing eight software engineers. That was the target.
8-1. And that kind of ratio, it works when you're managing one big system,
yeah.
Right? Keeps things straightforward.
Exactly. It's clean on an org chart. One EM, maybe one product manager. They look after this unified chunk of the system. It's all about coordination, minimizing risk in that big interconnected environment.
Okay, got it. So now AgileWorks, you said they evolved over a decade.
Oh yeah, totally different story.
Yeah.
They didn't just stumble into their structure. They spent 10 years actively building it. They've moved pretty aggressively, actually, from their own monolith towards mostly microservices.
And that wasn't just changing the tech stack, was it?
Not at all. It was an organizational decision, a commitment to speed, to autonomy, to just constantly improving things.
So structurally, how did they look to support that speed?
Fundamentally different. Small teams, cross-functional, and critically domain-aligned. each team owned its little slice of the world, its domain, its data, how it got deployed, real autonomy.
Okay, small autonomous teams.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense for microservices.
Yeah, but here's the really interesting bit about their structure, the part that often gets missed. Their span of control target was different, smaller. 5 direct reports per EM, not 8.
5 instead of 8. Okay.
But crucially, and this is key, the EM didn't directly manage the delivery team as a unit.
Oh, how did that work?
The EM managed their 5 reports, sure, but those people might be spread across different teams. The actual day-to-day health of a specific team, its performance, its flow, that was handled by a dedicated agile leader.
Ah, so you separated people management from team performance management.
Exactly. That separation was like the engine for their autonomy and speed. The EM focused on the individual. The agile leader focused on the team's flow.
Okay, that's a really clear contrast. Legacy tech, central control, 1.8 ratio, unified system focus, agile works, distributed autonomy, 1.5 ratio, EMs managing individuals, agile leaders managing team flow, domain focus.
You got it. 2 successful but very different machines.
So that the acquisition happens. Legacy tech buys AgileWorks.
Yeah.
And the first priority from legacy tech management is predictable, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Consistency. That was the word. The mandate came down. AgileWorks must change its structure immediately. They had to adopt the standard legacy tech 1 AM to 8 reports model, period.
And you can kind of see the logic from their side, maybe. Standard HR, consistent manager roles.
Oh, absolutely. On paper, it looks rational, efficient, uniform, fair across the whole company. Why should this new group be different?
Yeah.
But this is exactly where Phil Clark brings in the big gun, Conway's Law.
Ah, the classic. Organizations design systems that mirrored their communication structures. We quote it all the time, but how did it bite them here?
Because it explained why each company was successful in its own way. AgileWorks' success came from its structure. Small autonomous teams built small autonomous services. They could talk easily within the team, so the services stayed independent.
Right.
Legacy Tech's success came from its structure. Larger, coordinated teams built large, coordinated systems. Communication flowed through managers coordinating efforts across a monolith.
So when Legacy Tech forced the structure change,
they basically force the communication patterns to change, mandating that 1.8 ratio, ignoring the domain boundaries that AgileWorks had carefully built around its microservices. It meant the system itself started to change, to drift back.
And this is what Phil calls architectural regression. It's not like the code got bad overnight.
No, not at all. The engineers are still good engineers, but the flow was instantly broken. Teams that used to release independently, maybe multiple times a day, suddenly couldn't.
Why not? What was the block?
The new structure. That one EM, now responsible for 8 people, might be covering engineers working across what used to be 2 or 3 separate independent domains.
Ah, so they're juggling totally different priorities.
Exactly. Different product managers, different backlogs, different release cadences, all funneling through one manager. The teams now had to coordinate constantly, wait for the manager, sync up across domains that were never meant to be coupled.
So the human structure, forced into this standard model, became the bottleneck.
Precisely. The system became inherently more coupled. More meetings, more waiting, more manager check-ins, less independent flow. They solved an HR consistency problem by creating a huge operational and ultimately architectural problem.
Wow. Okay. And that blockage, that misunderstanding of the structure, it leads to another moment Phil highlights, right? When legacy tech leaders looked at AgileWorks and asked about all the products.
Yeah, that's a killer moment. They looked at the portfolio and basically said, why do you have so many SKUs, so many products? They saw it as messy, inefficient, maybe.
But that question just completely missed the point of AgileWorks' entire evolution.
Totally. From the perspective of someone used to managing a few large monolithic systems, dozens of small products looks like chaos or, you know, needless proliferation.
But each SKU wasn't just random.
No. Each one represented a bounded context. That's a crucial concept. Think of it like a mini business within the business. It has its own specific language, its own rules, its own way of working focused on its specific domain.
And that independence is the whole point of microservices, isn't it?
Exactly. Small, focused, autonomous, independently deployable, loosely coupled, all the good stuff. The DORA research consistently shows this kind of decoupling directly predicts better delivery performance, stability, you name it.
So what legacy tech saw as messy complexity
was actually the source of AgileWorks' speed and resilience. It was their competitive advantage made visible in the org structure and product list.
Which brings us right to the mindset behind the decision. the legacy mindset, as Phil puts it. The thinking was basically, look, we can't rebuild our entire company to look like this small acquisition.
So they'll have to look like us. Yeah, it's pragmatic in a way.
Right. Legacy Tech might have, what, 20 big teams across the whole company? AgileWorks had maybe 11 highly decoupled teams. From a purely numerical standardization point of view.
It seems easier to change the 11 than the 20 plus. Why risk huge disruption across the enterprise when you can just enforce the standard on the smaller group? Makes sense if your whole career has been about managing predictability in large monolithic systems.
So it wasn't malice, just applying the playbook that had always worked before.
Exactly. Legacy Tech's leaders were acting rationally based on their experience and their definition of success. Control, uniformity, predictability. They were just completely unaware that the thing they'd bought operated on fundamentally different but equally valid principles. The context had changed.
And this failure to see the underlying organizational engine, that's the diligence gap Phil talks about?
Yeah. Standard M&A due diligence is great at looking at the hard assets. Code quality, tech stack, revenue projections, scalability tests.
Checking the tech.
Checking the tech, exactly. But it often completely misses the organizational architecture. How are the teams actually structured? How are they managed? What motivates them? How does that structure enable the technology to work the way it does?
So they bought the car, but didn't check the kind of factory and workforce needed to keep building it that way.
That's a good way to put it. AgileWorks speed wasn't just code. It was a socio-technical system. The team structure, the autonomy, the leadership model, it was all intertwined with the microservices. Ignore that during integration, and you inevitably break the system that made the tech valuable. You buy the Ferrari engine, like you said, and then you try to run it with tractor parts and processes.
Okay, so seeing this train wreck starting to happen, the AgileWorks senior leader tried a compromise, right? The hybrid model.
Yeah, a valiant effort, really. A last-ditch attempt to satisfy the legacy tech mandate while trying desperately to preserve some of the original flow.
What did that look like?
They tried to hit the 1 EM to 8 reports target. So they grouped engineers from different but maybe related domains under a single EM to get the numbers right. The idea was, okay, the manager hits the headcount target, but maybe we can still keep the work flowing within the original domain boundary somehow.
But just trying to make the numbers work had immediate consequences, didn't it?
Oh, immediate and pretty devastating. First, like we talked about, the EMs were now responsible for two or maybe three different domains, each potentially with its own product manager, its own priorities, its own funding battles. Chaos for the EM. Second, to make the roles consistent with legacy tech's job descriptions, they got rid of the dedicated agile leader role.
The person protecting the team's flow.
Yep. Those responsibilities, team health, removing blockers, coaching on flow got folded into the already overloaded EM role.
That just sounds like setting people up to fail. The cognitive load alone.
It was immense. The managers were drowning, trying to translate between multiple product visions, track different deployment pipelines, understand different metrics, mediate conflicting priorities. Decision-making just slowed to a crawl.
And accountability gets muddy too, I bet.
Totally blurred. If something breaks or slows down, whose fault is it? The EM juggling three domains, the PMs fighting for attention. The structure itself created bottlenecks and coupling in a system that was built specifically to avoid them, all to meet an HR target.
So this compromise, this hybrid model, it really just highlighted the fundamental incompatibility and brought them to a crossroads. Phil lays out two paths, basically.
Yeah, a stark choice. Path one, stick with the hybrid mess. But to make that work, legacy tech leaders would have to fundamentally change their way of thinking. They'd need new management training. They'd have to redefine the EM role to support autonomy, embrace the complexity, basically change their mindset.
Okay, that's path one. Change the management approach. What's path two?
Path two, full consolidation. Give up on the hybrid. Just fully merge everything into the standard legacy tech structure. Simplify the reporting lines, standardize all the roles, make it look neat on the org chart, but accept that you're recoupling systems that were deliberately independent. Accept that you're changing the architecture back towards something slower.
Change the structure to match existing management approach.
Exactly. And that choice, Phil argues, really shows the core lesson. The outcome wasn't going to be determined by process tweaks. It depended entirely on leadership understanding. Could the leaders adapt their mindset?
Because structure follows mindset.
Yes.
And mindset follows experience.
Precisely. If the leader's experience only equipped them to manage a hierarchy geared for predictability, they would inevitably reshape the organization into that hierarchy, no matter what the underlying technology needed.
It's just incredibly ironic. They buy AgileWorks because it's fast and nimble.
And the very first thing they do is impose the control structures that guarantee slowing it down, dismantling the capability they paid a premium for.
Wow.
But, you know, it's important to stress this isn't really a story about heroes and villains. Mm. Legacy Tech wasn't trying to break AgileWorks. They were following their own playbook, the one that had made them successful and predictable for years.
Right.
And AgileWorks had followed its principles to achieve speed and resilience. Both were right in their own contexts. The failure wasn't in either approach initially. It was a failure of integration, a failure to integrate understanding, to recognize that success looked different in this new combined entity.
So bring it back to the listener. If you're involved in an M&A deal, or even just trying to improve how your own teams work, what's the big takeaway here?
It boils down to this, really. Before you start standardizing structures, especially for consistency, you absolutely have to understand the organizational DNA, the team structures, the leadership models, the communication paths that built the successful system you're dealing with.
Because if you just change the container, the organizational structure,
the stuff inside the speed, the autonomy, the value it's going to change to, probably not in the way you hoped.
Okay. And maybe a final provocative thought for everyone to chew on, building on Phil's analysis.
If you buy the product, the tech, the asset, but you fail to understand and actively protect the system of people and practices that built it and keep it running fast, well, the architecture doesn't stay static. It starts changing all by itself.
Drifting, often back towards being slower, more coupled, more complex, less competitive, basically drifting in the direction you least want it to go. So maybe ask yourself, where in your organization might structure and architecture be silently drifting apart right now, maybe because of that seemingly harmless desire for consistency?
That's a powerful question. And again, we really do recommend reading Phil Clark's original article, The Price of Alignment, over on RethinkYourUnderstanding.com. The details are even richer.
Absolutely. Well, that's all the time we have for this deep dive. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time.